welcome to episode 4 of season 19 of the Growing Empire Show. Today, I am back with my special co-host, Robert Musso, and our special guest, Justin Warzyczniak. Today, we're going to talk about how this engineer turned real estate investor full-time and what he's found real estate to provide as far as creating wealth and a legacy. I'm excited to talk to Justin and Robert today and learn how a highly recruited engineer turns full-time multifamily investor. We're going to talk about building wealth through direct-to-seller programs and how Justin got named a cashflow cowboy. So make sure you stay tuned.
Welcome to Growing Empires, hosted by real estate entrepreneur and trusted investment advisor, Jennifer DeJesus. Growing Empires provides insight to building wealth through passive income-producing real estate investments for those who want to build and manage a more profitable real estate portfolio.
Welcome to the Growing Empires podcast, where it's our mission to help investors create wealth through real estate and secure financial freedom. We have an amazing show planned today, and I'm excited to discuss topics with our guest, Justin Warzyczniak. And we're going to discuss today how to transition or how Justin transitioned from engineer to entrepreneur. We're going to talk about building wealth through direct to seller programs. And most importantly, why you're nicknamed the Cashflow Cowboy. And we're going to do things a little different than we've done in previous episodes. Co-hosting with me today is my friend and colleague, Robert Musso. So Robert, welcome to the show.
It is good to be back as your co-host this season. I am excited for another episode. Very, very exciting candidate. My name is Robert. I am a hotelier turned full-time real estate professional. I've been investing in real estate for 20 years, started off my career in the hotel sector. Now I'm engaged in real estate full-time 7 days a week with single, multifamily, industrial, and development. And I live by the mantra of using real estate as the bridge to living your best life. Investing, traveling, spending time with family, and cooking great food. So it's good to be here again.
Awesome. And let me talk to you a little bit about our special guest, Justin. So Justin's been, he was once a highly recruited engineer, turned full-time multifamily investor. He's 29 years old and has a very impressive track record. Justin's been involved in over 40 transactions. He's a primary investor on 7 generational wealth multifamily assets, totaling 88 units. And because of his ability to find and close off-market deals at massive discounts, Justin's been able to create over $1 million in equity across those properties. All of this has happened in just the last 3 years. So Justin's on a mission to hit 300 units by age 30. So Justin, welcome to the show.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on, Jen and Robert.
So besides what I've already shared about you, what would you like our listeners to know about your current journey in real estate? Where, you know, kind of a little bit of background and then quickly how you kind of got to where you are today and how you see this progressing in the future.
Yeah. So the quick 30-second story of my background is, you know, I didn't come from a family that had any ties to real estate or significant wealth, right? So if you're going to take anything out of what we talk about today is that, you know, this is accessible to anyone in any, you know, any age group. You can be super young. You can be, you know, you can be on your third career in real estate roll around. It doesn't really matter. The opportunity is always going to be there. Now, my word of caution will be real estate is a market driven industry. So, you know, when I first got started, I was a highly recruited engineer, right? Top of my class. I went into pharmaceuticals and that brought me to the Midwest, and I was, you know, I was doing well, like I, you know, great salary, great paycheck. But what I did differently than my colleagues was, they were going with their new, you know, they were just college kids, and now they had money in their pockets, so they were going and leasing real nice downtown apartments. They were, you know, luxury A-class apartments downtown, you know, close to all the fun stuff. And don't get me wrong, I wanted to do that. But what I did was instead I did a house hack. So I was working 60 hours a week, if maybe more engineering. And then I'd come home, I'd put on the tool belt and I'd start building out a kitchen and a bathroom in this single family home that had a converted basement, right? And I actually checked my pride at the door and I lived in the basement renting out the upstairs for my mortgage plus a significant amount. And so you fast forward, that was, you know, I sold it 24 months later, and with the cash flow and the profit, it was $100,000 that I put in my pocket. And that was like kind of that aha of, wow, if I did this on one property, what can I do with multiple properties? And got connected with folks like you guys, MIH Mastermind, just other groups, other investors that were doing it at a much higher level. And that's what I think propelled me is like, you know, I'd like to think I'm someone special. I'm just your ordinary Joe that got around the right people that helped grow my business. And so now, right, you mentioned in the bio, we're at 7 assets that we have, 88 total units. We, you know, we just put in an offer last Friday. We're hoping to get that in a new market. We're just trying to grow and start doing some of these larger multifamily deals so I can hit that ultimate goal of 300 units in my 30s, which, you know, coming from a kid with, you know, no real estate background whatsoever, I mean, I think that's a pretty cool goal if we can achieve it.
Oh, that's really awesome. So Justin, that actually is great. That actually helps us transition into our first topic, which is the actual breakaway from your engineering career into real estate. What I find with talking to, you know, people that are in these highly paid jobs, right? These highly paid careers, whether it be engineers, doctors, attorneys, CPAs, you name it. I think everybody struggles with how to actually make that transition and the fear of going from that, you know, salary job to, you know, what if this doesn't work? So I'd like to get a little bit more nitty gritty on the actual transition for you. So you mentioned that you didn't come from a real estate family. So why real estate? How did that even come about?
I think like most of us, I read the purple book, right? Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And that was enough to get me kind of hooked and like, oh man, maybe I got to do something a little different. But I read that book as I was graduating university and moving to the Midwest for my first job. And so started working. And even when I was in my job, there was other engineers that I sought out that had real estate experience, right? So they were either investing on the side or they owned a couple properties, and that, you know, I wanted to get around them. In addition, I think another huge help was local meetups. So I know it's preached a lot in a lot of, you know, podcasts or books and stuff, going to local meetups, like actually go to it. I was green. I didn't know anything besides what I had read in the book about investing in real estate investing specifically, but I was going to local meetups and there was guys there that had thousands of units. And I'm able to ask, you know, what I thought was stupid questions at the time, and they don't care. They're just happy to be there and happy to, you know, share the wealth, and mentorship is so huge in our industry. And so just being around them has been real helpful. And you want to hear the funny thing, Jen? And so I was this, you know, highly recruited engineer. You know, I think I'm a smart guy, right? And so I got in these rooms with some folks that, how can I say this politely? I looked at and I go, there's no way this guy or this gal is is doing so freaking well in real estate. What is so special about them? And I realized that they just happened to be in, you know, they just happened to be doing that process correctly. And there was, you know, for lack of a better word, I was like, there's no way that they're doing it and I can't do it. So it was almost like encouraging to see other people doing it, and also people that you're like, if they can freaking do it, I can freaking do it. And so that was like kind of what propelled me. Now, the switch. I do want to talk about this a little bit, and maybe Robert can chime in as well, because obviously he had his background in hospitality before going into real estate full time. I was 25, 26 when I was doing my switch, right? So think about where I was in life. No significant bills, no wife, no kids, like no significant family here that you're worried about. So if you think about it, my risk was limited by making the switch early. So if you're not in that type of situation, it is more of a, let's build up some of the passive income by doing real estate on the side, whether that's as a LP, a passive investor, as a limited partner LP, or maybe just kind of pick and choose a couple deals. You might not scale as crazy fast as you want initially, but you're going to feel way, way more secure when you do ultimately start, you know, taking the hours away from your active job and putting it into building your real estate. Did you feel the same, Robert, when you were making the switch?
Yeah, I think elements of everyone's personal and professional life eventually fall into that leave corporate America and be an entrepreneur category, but there is no blueprint. There's not a book that you could read, okay, here's when you should leave corporate America, here's how you leave corporate America, and ready, set, go. It all comes down to what's going on in your individual life. You know, what are your finances? What are your backgrounds? You know, how good can you absorb risk? Do you have a significant other? Do you have children? You know, what's your long-term vision? So there's so many factors involved, and everyone, and I use this term all the time with, you know, with investors and people, you know, everyone's a snowflake. Everyone just has a different, you know, design and chemical makeup on how they want to do things. But yes, a lot of similarities. I happen to wait 10 years later than you. And it's probably because of my demographic and age where, you know, when I started in corporate America, we barely had email addresses and social media wasn't even, you know, a hint of what is out there. So, you know, and I'm only 20 years older than you. So it's like everything is different, you know, depending on your demographic, your age, your situation. But yeah, there a lot of similarities as well.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And if you think about it too, timing wise, I think this was 2021 was when I bought my first asset, right? 10 unit apartment building, 35,000 a door, 1995 build. It's been a nice home run for us on the first deal. But the market was cruising at that point, right? And so if you think about it, if I had, let's say, you know, the last couple of years with rates being up, the deal volume has dwindled, right? We've all seen it, you know, mm-hmm. especially even on the direct to seller side, like it just volumes down. So if I were to pick that moment to switch over, heck, I would have done it for 6 months and I'd be back in corporate America, right? I'd need a paycheck, right? And so even getting in there at the right time and building up some, you know, portfolio, that's still not enough cash flow necessarily for me to live off of, right? I still have, you know, now I have a fiance, right? We're trying to plan a wedding, right? We got to, you know, there's bills to pay and stuff like that. And so, you know, at this point, it's like, you know, maybe do some consulting, maybe do some acquisitions for an existing company because real estate is cyclical, right? We're in a lower market. You know, I don't know if we've hit the bottom or maybe we're close to the bottom, but we're going to come out, you know, with full force, but just kind of weathering that storm, I think was something timing wise was big for me. And then being able to build up a portfolio initially to kind of weather it for a little bit as we saw the market slow.
Interestingly enough, I had a different journey into real estate than the two of you. So, you know, Justin, you chose to leave before you had bills and responsibilities. Robert did the opposite. He left after he had, you know, bills and responsibilities and a family and children. And I was completely the opposite. I was downsized. I had no choice. I was kicked out. And if, at that time I did have kids and I was married and things like that as well. But it's interesting is that we all kind of journeyed into real estate for a different reason, but are all seeing how financially rewarding real estate can be when done right. And 100% believe that all three of our paths looked incredibly different to how we got started, what were the first steps, and how we got to where we are today. But there are a lot of similarities amongst the three of us, and that's that we all dove into education. We all surrounded ourselves with people that, you know, would empower us and help us. And we look at things like partnerships and, you know, our connections as the most valuable resource that we have. And in addition to this, all three of us made the commitment that there was no other option. Even if there truly was another option, we all made the decision to dive in and then dove in. And then that was it. There was no looking back. So I think those similarities also played well for all of us. So I'm curious, Justin, did you encounter any skeptics when you chose real estate over engineering when you made that big decision?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I mean, look no further than my family, right? I had to get through that. And, you know, I've said this a million times, and I say it a lot to kind of folks that are still influenced by their parents, in the sense that, like, maybe they're younger and they're either living at home going through college, or, you know, maybe their first job out of college. It's like, you are looking at your parents as they're kind of the figure of guidance, right? And so my dad was an engineer, and my grandfather was an engineer as well, his dad. So it was kind of I wouldn't say I was forced into engineering, but it almost felt like, oh, I was going to be an engineer. I worked my tail off. I graduated, you know, 4.0, top of my class. And that's what got me this great job after university. But what I missed was the fact that when I was making the switch, I was getting friction from my family, and it had nothing to do with me or anything like that. It had to do with the fact that they were taught that the way to grow wealth is to go to college, get a strong degree, whether that be some STEM degree or business degree, and then just go after it and just keep grinding, like work. And the harder you work, the better the payoff will be. And eventually, you know, at the end of the, you know, last 20 years, whatever, you get to retire. And that's kind of been the philosophy. Now, when I was making the switch to go after passive income, their friction was more of like it was different than what they were taught. So there's going to be some friction there, right? That's totally understandable. And the other thing is, like, they genuinely loved me so much that they don't want to see me fail, right? So they don't want me to go do something that's a little bit against the status quo, in a sense, because that could lead me to fail, right? And in that case, they don't want to see, obviously, their son fail. So that was definitely a big thing. And I think there is some inherent risks in what we're doing, but we know how to hedge it with education, right? And we know how to make sure that, you know, we're getting around the right people. Like, you know, Jen, you said it, right? We all have three totally separate paths for getting here. But if you want to call it like the blueprint, it's the surrounding ourselves with the right people, great partnerships, right? Vetting our partners and investing with great people, and, you know, education, making sure we're not just, you know, throwing darts at the board here. We're making educated investments, right? And so that's kind of been the thing for me, where at first it was hard to get through kind of the parental friction. But once you kind of show them the track record, once you start having success, and even my happiness levels went up significantly than when I was doing my engineering job. So that obviously was a plus for them as well. They want to see their child happy. So just kind of combining those factors, a little bit of friction at first, but once you have the track record, it kind of, you know, people are now coming to you asking for real estate advice, which, you know, you would have never thought, you know, I'd have my parents asking that.
Yeah, no, that's all fascinating. And so, you know, that for me, for example, I remember very, very vividly 11 years ago when I left, a lot of people kept asking me, I don't understand it. You had a good paying job, you had fringe benefits, you were traveling all over the world, you have a brand new baby at home, you know, your wife's out of work as a school teacher until the baby gets a little bit older. Like, how are you doing it? How do you focus on the income shift, right? So it was all about cash flow. It was all about the income shift. Now, I could speak for an hour on this topic, but I'm going to direct the question to you. So what advice would you give someone who's got a high-paying career? He or she wants to do what we do, but is worried about the income shift. What would you suggest to them?
Yeah, I think there's two points to start. Either be a limited partner on a deal. Like, go find someone like Robert and Jen that are great people that you trust, that they have a track record of success in doing deals, and be like, all right, what I'm going to do is I'm going to put 25, 50, 100,000 into this deal in exchange for, I want a little bit of mentorship, right? You know, don't, you know, labor them with a ton of questions and stuff like that, but don't be the super, super passive investor that doesn't learn anything with their investment, right? Try to be a little bit more involved. And then eventually, you know, you can kind of do that. We've joined a mastermind group, which has been really great for a lot of folks that, you know, have those high paying jobs and want to kind of start making the transition. And they go, and maybe the first two deals, they're limited partners. And then they get on the general partner side. Maybe they're bringing in some capital raising. And so they're slowly learning by doing it, like doing deals. And then eventually down the road, they got a couple deals under their belt. They have the experience, and maybe now they're the main sponsorship team on a particular asset. And then that's kind of how they got propelled into it without just going almost like cold turkey, like cutting off smoking completely. It's like, it's probably not going to work. Right. So you want to kind of ease your way into it if possible. Now, the other route, I think, is if you want to go right into being a little bit more active, there's the whole house hack term is thrown around a lot in our industry, especially, you know, bigger pockets, great resource for new investors. You can go that. So you'll essentially just go smaller, right? You'll be able to like a 1-4 unit, and you'll live in one of the units, rent out the other units. And that's kind of you get experience with a transaction. You get experience with being a landlord, collecting rent, ballparking maintenance and renovating if you needed to. And so there's like kind of like a smaller way of learning how it works. Now, to scale, you can't, you know, it's going to take a while to just go from a 2-unit to another 2-unit to another 2-unit, right? If you want to start building up large number of units, you kind of need to start not living in them. you buy them as investments, but that's a good way. That's how I got into it early. And I pretty much just used the income from my job to fund that initial house hack. And then from there sold that, and those funds went into the next deal, the 10 unit that we bought, and then kind of the cash flow from there, and then other acquisition transactions went into the next deal, right? And then slowly I ran out of money and started bringing on partners and other investors. And as a team, we went and, you know, they helped with the capital. I found a good deal. And then that's how we've kind of been able to scale recently.
The episode will continue in just a moment.
As an investor, we know it's important to stay on top of market trends and real estate opportunities that add value to your portfolio. We also know that having a trusted source of reliable information to help you stay a step ahead of other investors is critical to your success. If you're interested in having these types of resources, as well as access to me and my team, I invite you to join the Empire Investment Club, a free service that gives you an easier way to make sense of today's and tomorrow's real estate opportunities. As a member of the Empire Investment Club, you'll get access to relevant resources and investment-focused experiences such as live interactive webinars, market trend presentations, and investor socials designed to equip you with what you need to succeed. So whether you're an active investor, passive investor, a combination of both, or just starting out, the club is where you'll get what you need to build a portfolio you love. To join, just head over to jenniferdejesus.com, sign up, and we'll see you in the club, where everyone's on a journey to becoming a better investor.
You know, Justin, I think you brought up some really, really key points. And, you know, one of those is, you know, you can be active. We talk about active and passive with investors, right? But you can also be active and passive with your time. So, you know, you brought up some really key points. You can just invest in a deal. That's extremely passive. You're right. You're handing over your money and saying, here, in lieu of this, let me learn a little bit. That's a great entry place. And, you know, if you've invested in the right type of deal, hopefully your money's growing simultaneously, right? So it's giving you a bigger nest egg for when you want to actually make that final move. But you also mentioned the other side of it, which is there are active roles. And sometimes those active roles can be done in addition to that full-time career, right? It just depends on where you really have a skill set that you can lend to somebody. I was literally having this conversation with a client of mine yesterday who was looking to leave his corporate job, loves real estate, wants to invest in more, but he wants to scale beyond the assets that he owns personally, right? Because he's only been able to get to a certain area with his income and, you know, his ability to get debt service and things like that. And where he is or where he's gotten to versus where he wants to be are two different things. And I said, almost similarly to what you just said, is that, you know, if you want to get in, number one, surround yourself, right? You don't necessarily have to be the only person running the deal. You need to think outside of the mindset of oh, this is my deal. I own it. I got to deal with it. Like, what are you really good at? Are you a great underwriter? Do you like numbers, right? You could just add value to a partnership by just being the underwriter. Maybe you're super well connected, or maybe you are an engineer or a doctor or an attorney or somebody that's well connected to other people with capital that are looking to be more passive, and you could just do the capital raising. Maybe you are local in a market that, you know, it is critical for boots on the ground. Maybe you've got some experience on that. So there are so many ways for people to even just tiptoe, I think, into this before they make that, you know, that full commitment or rip that Band-Aid off like we all ended up doing. You know, it doesn't have to be so dramatic. There are ways to tiptoe into this business and be able to position yourself in an area where it makes a logical transition for you to just, you know, switch one light off and switch the other one on with not as much risk as maybe we've all kind of, you know, experienced. So I'm curious though, you know, I think everybody's background and life experiences also play a part in this. So as an engineer, right, you had some really key, I think, learnings or things that now are lending themselves really well to real estate as a whole. So what was it from your engineering career that you feel like really helped you get comfortable? And what did you feel like maybe did it help you in your trajectory? Or do you think that there were other things that helped you kind of grow and get invested in this real estate game?
Yeah, I think everything you do in life has, you know, it leads you down the path that you're on, right? So engineering is critical for why I'm successful now. And the reason being, I might not be working on machines like I was. I wasn't, you know, mass producing a bunch of pharmaceutical medicines, life-saving medicines. I'm not doing that anymore, right? But what I am doing every single day and what my degree in is problem solving. I literally got a degree in how to solve any problem out there, right? That's pretty much engineering down to its basics. And so That applies probably more than ever in real estate, because as you guys know, especially, you know, on the property management side, even on the investor relations side, like acquisitions, there is always problems. There are always fires that we're putting out. But having that degree is kind of like, I've never thought there's a problem I can't figure out. Right. And we've even done, you know, recent transactions that have been, you know, quote unquote transactions from HE double hockey sticks. And we've got them across the finish line and we got them closed up. And it was because, one, I just was like, all right, we're going to figure this out one way or another. We're going to get this done. And two, I had great people around me that I can reference, pick up the phone, call folks that will help me with my business, help me get it across the finish line with no expectation of anything in return. And that's what's so awesome about having good relationships, good mentors, right? And so, you know, for me, that kind of worked, but it might not be the same for everybody. But the other thing with engineering, right, that it helped me was systems and processes. And you guys, I mean, I'm sure you guys can teach a whole master class on this. It's like, besides, like, real estate is a people business, but you can gain an edge in this people business by emphasizing your systems and processes. That can be on your property management. That can be on how you're doing direct to seller. In my case, right, I'm getting a competitive edge because I'm more consistent and I'm better at kind of hacking relationships with sellers, right? Because I have, you know, everything in place, the resources, the systems, the processes, all that set up, because that's kind of how my brain works, right? That's how it always has been. So engineering, yeah, it was a difficult degree. I put a lot of effort in, a lot of time, but at the end of the day, I might not use the thermodynamics. I might not use the, you know, the differential equations. However, I do use a lot of aspects in what I do today in real estate.
Yeah, that's awesome. I actually want to jump into a little bit more about your direct to seller, because, you know, like you mentioned, right, there's so many different ways to tackle this, right? You can get involved in real estate in a passive or active role. When you did that first house hack and then you decided to move on to something else, you built a direct to seller program that you utilized to expand and grow your portfolio. And that's how you've been able to scale. So tell me a little bit about why you focus on direct to seller versus other traditional methods like broker to broker. And you know, give like a high level overview of what direct to seller is. So for those of our listeners that are not really familiar with it, that term, they understand it, but then why you saw a need for it in your business and why that was the method that you chose to kind of focus your energy and your skills on to actually create.
Yeah, Jen, I did it because I had to. Like I, out of pure necessity, I kind of happened into a direct to seller approach. And the way this happened is, like, think about where I was when I got into real estate. I'm 25, 26, just no longer, I don't have a job anymore, right? And so, and I have no track record of family history or any investment history myself. So think about how that phone call with a broker would go, asking them to send me deals. Hey, I have no experience. I also have, you know, in a sense, they're looking at me with no money to get a loan. Please send me all your good deals. And you're gonna be like, who are you? You know, go kick rocks. And that's what I, you know, that's essentially what happened. And so I was like, okay, well, I'm not gonna give up here. Well, let me just go talk to the owners myself. Let me give them my story, right? Let me tell them who I am. Let me sell myself to them. And then maybe they'll go, all right, he might not be able to offer the absolute top dollar, but you know, we can sell it to him. We don't have to pay the broker, and maybe it'll work out like that. And that's how I happened into those first couple deals. And so it actually started when I left engineering. I got licensed as a realtor because I was like, I need some sort of income. Right. And what I did was, instead of going out and just representing every buyer out there, which is, you know, I'm not trying to, you know, buyer's agents are a different breed. All I did was I got a list of people who had tried to sell their property and failed for one way or another. And I just clicked through that list and I looked at all the ones that had just terrible marketing. And I'd go, all right, calling these people. And so I literally only targeted listings. And so in a sense, I was doing direct to seller because I was reaching out to them directly. But instead of buying it, I was saying, hey, let me put it on the market for somebody else to buy. Then I'd bring the buyer, I'd collect my commission. And after a few of those deals, I'm like, why am I not buying these? Like, I'm already doing all the work to get in front of these folks. And that's kind of where the system started. I'm like, okay, well, if I'm going to buy it, what do I need to put in place? Right. So direct to seller, if you want to boil it down for, you know, the newbies, right? Think of it like driving a vehicle. So you got your car, you have gas for the car, and then you have the driver for the car. And so the car itself is going to be what I like to call your system. So in our case, if you've been in any sort of sales role, is CRM, was it customer relationship manager or something like that? Yeah. But it's pretty much just like you take your, instead of using an Excel sheet, use something that can track your contacts and track your leads through a funnel, right? That's what it is. Salesforce, Zoho, there's a million different options out there. Then your fuel is like your leads that you're putting in our case, properties that we want to buy, right? And you put them into there, you start calling them, you start texting them, you start emailing them, whatever your marketing strategy is, direct mail. And then eventually you get some people responses, and then it's you as the driver to then close the deal, right? So you got to have good relationship skills. You got to, you know, if you're meeting them at the property, if you're negotiating the contracts and stuff like that, and that's what gets it over the finish line. So I kind of just built that out of necessity. I didn't have any lead flow and I wasn't going to let that stop me. So then, you know, you kind of fast forward, we started actually having success, right? So we buy a 10 unit off market. We're buying 27 unit off market, a couple 8 units off market. A few of them, I mentioned earlier, like I ran out of money. So I had deals under contract. And instead of buying them, I wholesaled them to, you know, another buyer, and I used that capital for the next deal, right? So it really kind of spiraled. And what the cool thing about it is direct to seller has now been, because I've built up a portfolio, now I'm able to do deals with those brokers who originally were saying, who are you? We don't know you, because there's the recognition, right? Combine that with some social media, there's the recognition there of who I am as an investor. But brokers are also kind of, in a sense, direct to seller, right? You need to be consistently following up with them as well and building relationships with them. So the same principles I've been using when I'm talking to a seller, those are the same principles that apply when you're talking to a broker. You just might not be doing as much, you know, direct marketing in that situation.
Yeah, that's, you know, very, very detailed and great explanation, Justin. I mean, I've talked to you in depth about, you know, all this in the past as well. You just probably ate up about 5 questions I had from you just in that one summary, which is great. So, you know, so with that being said, you know, I do believe there needs to be a balance. Relationships are key to everything in real estate. So I have very, very strong relationships with brokers like Jennifer, for example. She's also a property manager. She can also get directly to sellers off market in addition. So, you know, I highly encourage people to always, you know, keep that in mind. But this is just another wonderful tool and ammunition that you can have, you know, under your belt with direct to seller, because there are many advantages, like you just said. So with that being said, what are some of those tools? Like if someone wanted to start tomorrow on that, why don't you just explain a little bit about your direct to seller system, you know, and how people could get in touch with you about it and how that kind of works. Is there an ABC way that you could easily explain that to people?
Definitely. I think the first thing you need to do is identify where you're getting your list of properties. But like that sounds easier. It's like, what do you want? I think there's like a hilarious, like if you think about Alice in Wonderland, where they're like asking the cat where to go. And they're like, well, where do you want to go? They're like, well, I don't know. It's like, well, then how can I tell you which direction to take if you literally don't know where you want to go? And that's mm-hmm. the same thing for investing. Like, what type of property are you trying to buy? Are you trying to buy every property? You're no, get niched down, right? So in our case, right, BC class, value add, you know, 10 to 100 units in this market or these zip codes, right? So that, you know, and then maybe throw, you know, year built, like a vintage. I don't want it, you know, young, you know, I want 1980s and younger type stuff. So I'm really narrowing it down. And so now, knowing what I'm looking for, there's some different places to go, right? So if you want to find multifamily, I think a lot of folks use CoStar or someone with access to CoStar to get kind of that initial list. I've done mobile home parks and self-storage where I've gone on Google Maps. And for that area, I would just look at what looks like a mobile home park and what looks like a self-storage, and I'd flag it. And I combed through the entire area. And so the leads that we had were leads that aren't on other, you know, systems, because this is everything that's in that area, right? So it depends on how much effort you want to put into this. And I like to put in a lot of effort, right? So CoStar is great for multifamily. There's some other stuff out there, Reonomy, the local MLS, go to expired listings on the local MLS. You might find some stuff there. Like, so that's part of the stuff we kind of help our clients with. But as a result, it's like, you got to put some effort into this yourself, right? And then once you have your list, you can technically do this business on a Excel sheet, right? So you think about it, really all you need is like, hey, here's the property, here's the owner, and here's their contact information that we got through these different softwares. All right, I'm going to call them, right? And okay, they didn't answer. All right, let me mark them as a follow-up next week, right? Oh, they answered. They're interested in selling. All right, let me mark them as a hot lead and make sure that I'm following up all this week to get information, get an offer, right? That's the bare minimum. I highly suggest once you want to like commit to a business for direct to seller, you invest in a CRM. And that's kind of that way you're putting those leads into something that's kind of tracking them more formally. And, you know, you can convert them to deals once you have offers out and stuff like that. So that's kind of the other, you know, between getting the list and then the processes. And then, I mean, Robert, you know it from, and Jen, you know it from all your years of experience, like you are, whatever you do in life, you're building up these kind of people skills, these relationship skills that apply to what we're doing, right? So like a lot of times I'll go meet oh my gosh, this is a great example. I'll go meet an owner, right? And someone who doesn't know what they're doing will show up to that meeting with like khakis on and a nice button down and stuff like that, because you're like dressing like it's an interview. No. If this owner has, you know, has owned this for 10, 12 years and is super mom and pop, I'm throwing on a hoodie, I'm throwing on jeans and boots, and I'm putting on a hat, a ball cap, because that is going to be way more relatable and they're going to want to trust me more. And it opens the conversation better than trying to, like, you know, show like I'm some big sophisticated investor, which I may or may not be, right? So like there's those elements of relationships that need to be factored in when you're talking to owners and with brokers, right? I might go to the bank or the broker looking very nice because they want to view me as a sophisticated investor, but I'm not going to go to some mom and pop that's owned their land for a while, maybe some rural agricultural land looking like, you know, I'm straight out of suits, right? That's not going to go over well. They're not going to sell me anything, right? But at the end of the day, I'm still the same person. You just got to be more relatable with these folks. So I think that's kind of, if I'm going to part any advice on direct to seller, it's, you know, invest in a system, you know, get some good leads, and then make sure you actually do focus on building relationships with people, because that's what's actually going to get you deals and genuinely care about them. Don't just like build a relationship just to be like, all right, I got the deal. Like when you close, send them stuff at closing. If they mention their granddaughter, put that down in your notes when you're talking to them, and then ask how their granddaughter's ballet performance just went, because that's more important to them than $10,000 on a deal or $5,000. And that, you know, that 10 or five could be the difference for you, but for them, they care more about you caring about them. So make sure that it's genuine when you're doing this business.
Those are some incredible tips for mastering a direct to seller program. So I'm super curious. I'd love to know where the nickname Cashflow Cowboy comes from. It's so incredibly memorable. I'd like to know a little bit more about like where did it come from and what does it represent for you in your journey?
It came from kind of just messing around when I was in the Midwest, right? Right when I was getting started, had a cowboy hat on, you know, cash flow is a big, big trigger word in the real estate world, and it just kind of stuck. But the reason it stuck was it timed up with me kind of having a bit more of a social media presence with me exiting engineering and going into real estate. So as a result, there was actually an audience out there, started out as kind of the close family, friends and stuff that have always seen me as the engineer. And now they see me like, oh, what's Justin up to? Right. So it was just kind of branding at first. But what's super cool about, you know, the Cashflow Cowboy is there is a commitment to cash flow now with what I do, right? So a lot of folks, it's like you're either investing for cash flow, you're investing for appreciation. And I think why I like the Midwest market is because it is more of a cash flow market versus like a Florida or whatnot. And so I've invested in Indiana, Michigan. We just put an offer on a deal in North Carolina. And then I do have an asset in Florida. And it's funny, the one deal in Florida is the one that has the least amount of cash flow. And I'm like, well, this doesn't work, right? I got to get back to my roots, right? The cash flow cowboy. So yes, it could, you know, we could see the value significantly increase just by, you know, renovating and making it nicer. But I've always kind of been that, you know, I want a steady income. I want that property to be making money, to be profitable. And, you know, hold it long term, eventually that appreciation will kick in as well. And that's kind of cherry on the top.
Cool. You could break down cash flow anyway, right? You could get cash flowing to you on a refinance. You could get cash flowing to you on a sale. So you don't have to get so caught up in the cash flow every single month, right? Yeah. You know, with that being said, you're in Florida now. You have assets in several different states. So what does the future look like for you? Any new ideas or any new scenarios on the horizon, or are you kind of just sticking to the core right now, you know, for X amount of years until you figure something else out?
Yeah, I think what's important is that everybody stays consistent, right? If you are, you know, we mentioned it, like the deals are, we're not in 2021 where deals were just flying off the shelf, guys, right? So you have to be consistent and be more focused on people that you have relationships with. They might not be selling right now, but that doesn't mean you're just going to wait for 2 years and then you call them up and be like, all right, well, now I'm ready for you to sell it to me. No, you need to be talking to them for the next 2 years for them to sell you. So I think the consistency has been there. So I've been consistent with our leads, right? And some of them are actually shaking loose, but I think being in Florida or being in a different market than where you're investing, what I've personally found rewarding is, I can be on the deal finding side of things and the asset management side of things, but there needs to be one person in that partnership, at least, that is there in that market physically. And the reason I say that is you can get away for a couple months without it, but if you're not checking in on your asset, especially when times get tough, right? We saw inflation go rampant, right? So if you're not kind of check in your property management, not in the sense that they're doing a bad job, but they're not going to care about the asset as much as you are. So if you're just there and you go, hey, I noticed that, you know, we can do a cleanup, pay, you know, and they're like, all right, great. We'll schedule a cleanup, right? It's not like they've done anything wrong. You're just like, okay, this would help with the overall asset. So I think it is important. So when we're forming a team, you're going to have myself kind of on, you know, almost overseeing the acquisition and asset management. And then there's got to be somebody that's boots on the ground, or I don't really want to do it, because that's what we figured out is our assets that we weren't close to when times got tough were like, where'd the cash flow go? Like, what happened to this one? Like, we took our eyes off of it. We got a little lackadaisy, and those are the ones that are kind of, we're hurting a little bit more as we went into a tighter market. So I think that's kind of a lesson learned over the last couple of years is be consistent, right? Right now, your consistency is what's going to lead you to deals coming out of, a downer market. And make sure that, you know, someone in your partnership has eyes on your asset, and you're not just like kind of letting it go to its own accord. Like, follow up with it, check it out, make sure it's performing, because that is, you know, significant investment capital that are tied up in these assets. So make sure that they're performing well.
Awesome. So Justin, we're going to do something really fun, and it's called our lightning round. So this is where Robert and I are going to quick fire questions at you, and we want you to give us your quickest answer that you have for each one of these topics. You ready?
Let's do it.
So what AI are you currently using today in your real estate business?
ChatGPT for creating real estate acquisition scripts.
Awesome.
What is a must-read book for someone interested in real estate investing, in your opinion?
Interested? You have to read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. It's a must.
Okay. If you can go back, what's one piece of advice you'd give yourself before starting in real estate? If you could do it all over again.
The market isn't going to be on fire forever. Like, prepare for a market to go down and invest. When you see the market going down, invest in the operations of your business, not necessarily just new acquisitions.
What is the biggest mistake you've made in real estate, and what did you learn from it?
I bought a property incorrectly. And you make money when you buy, you also lose the money when you buy. So we're trying to exit that asset as quick as possible. We were off by, I think, about 30, 40% on our income projection. Pretty significant.
Okay. What's your morning routine?
5 a.m. gym. So I'm up at 4:30, getting ready, getting the energy drink going, and every day at the gym, 5 a.m.
Love it. Is there a favorite market that stands out for you right now?
My favorite market is, you know, blanket Midwest, but Indianapolis has been kind of my bread and butter.
What's the most important skill real estate investors need to develop?
Problem solving. There's going to be a million of them. You're going to be fighting fires now and forever, regardless of how passive you want to be.
For you and how it applies to your life, real estate is the bridge to
travel, golf. I mean, more fishing probably.
Hey. I love it. Everybody's different. Yeah.
That's awesome. What's one thing about the real estate industry that you wish more people understood?
That anybody can do it. Specifically, you don't have to come from money and necessarily have money to do it well. It might help a little bit for scaling, but it's not a necessity.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Justin, for your insights and unique perspective on building wealth through real estate. I definitely appreciate your time. How can our listeners get in contact with you?
Follow the Cashflow Cowboy on Instagram or Facebook, LinkedIn maybe. A little bit more professional on LinkedIn.
Well, that's awesome. Again, thank you, Robert, for being such a gracious co-host. Justin, thank you for your time as well. And that's a wrap. So until next time, take care.
For more information about how Jennifer can help you plan, develop, and manage a strong real estate investment portfolio, visit growingempires.com.